Welcome to the Boss It Weekly Podcast, a no-nonsense, no-hype, frank and close-up analysis of what is currently working and what is not in the world of software. The Boss It Podcast is packed with major takeaways for software business owners and managers. So, let's begin.
One, two, three, and away we go. Another Boss It Podcast. Well, today I have a guest. I would describe him as a former fallen angel, and he will explain that background in a minute. David Angel, tell me, what is it you do?
So I'm a sales coach. So I help people polish up on their skills, get a bit more effective in business. I do it for businesses, and I do it for a lot of the time for single entities. So for one-man band businesses, small businesses, and sort of help them polish up on those skills to get them making a bit more money, getting a few more deals or tweaking what they do, really.
And you're based down on the South Coast in the Isle of Wight, which is a nice location. You've got an interesting background, and we were having a quick chat about this just before we started recording on this podcast. And I think a lot of listeners, I mean, most of the listeners on this podcast come from the software tech, and they tend to be software entrepreneurs, founders, senior executives within software companies. And we all know how tough it can be sometimes in business, but also in life. And you've had some ups and downs.
Yeah, massively. Massively. There's a bit of a background on it. Normal upbringing, life was great, and all the usual stuff. I wasn't the best at school, but I just think school isn't created necessarily for everyone out there. No. So I came out of school, and I actually was according to being a chef at the early years, done quite well, got through auditions to get on MasterChef. But after a few years of doing that, I just had enough. And then you come out, if you haven't got path or a set skill set that you're moving into, sales was just something I fell into, just because a lot of companies will just take on people for sales and they like to get that turnover in. So I wasn't necessarily the best at it when I started. People that would put out five deals, I'd get two. And I couldn't really work it out, because I always thought, if I'm doing all the work, why am I not getting the same results? Everyone knows if it's just a case of working hard, the military would all be billionaires and people would do more hours. Yes. So I knew there was something different, and I had to become a good student. So I would follow the people that did amazingly well, learn what they learned, and started adding layers, start seeing more results. So, and I just become a great student with stuff. So that progressed.
What sort of stuff were you selling in those days?
God, I've done everything from door to door. Was one of the first ones out there. Wow. Commission only, doing the all that side of it, which was from doing things for, I did one of them, it was like Talk or something like that. And like different ones, they sign up people for different products and home internet services and all this type of thing, which again, it was just, it's a baptism of fire, because a lot of these things are looking back now. You didn't really get a lot of training. You'd be with someone, you'd shadow them for a few days or a day, and then you'd be out on an area where you would have pre-qualified houses or whatever it would be, and you'd go through knocking on doors, and it's literally, that was it. So it's not a big structure with a lot of these type of roles. So I progressed through, moved into doing different sales, moved into different products from business to business or through different areas, moved into doing your own sales, your own businesses, and things were going great. But I think with you get a certain amount of success reveals personality traits that you don't necessarily know. And with celebrating became partying, and with partying became more and more prevalent. And it becomes damaging, and that was the problem.
Before you go on to that part of your life, I'd really be interested to hear a bit more about what it was like going door to door, because I had some experience of that when I was very young.
God, there's some horror stories.
I know what it can be like. How did you find going door to door selling?
Daunting, because the thing is, we look now. And we think of door-to-door. So if you think of door-to-door and you've never done door-to-door, your only experience is seeing someone knock at your door. Now, we know what it's like when someone knocks your door and you open it, and there's someone stood there you don't know, and you know they're going to pitch you, and you're like, oh, they're disturbing me. But when you flip it around and you're on the other side and you know you're disturbing people, you know the reception isn't always great, and anything can happen. I've had ones where we were doing, we're on an estate. I can't remember where it was. I think we were at the time near Eastbourne somewhere, because we used to trek around quite a lot. And we were on a separate estate, and they thought we were Jehovah's Witnesses. Nothing against Jehovah's Witnesses. But on this estate, they weren't that keen on Jehovah's Witnesses. And we were chased down the road, me and this group of guys and girls, because everyone was dressed pretty smart, and people were throwing stuff. And I mean, these were kids. They were like 10, 12 years old, little scallies, just with nothing better to do with their time. And one of the guys tried stopping. And it was weird because we were like, we should run. And everyone's like, I'm not running. They're like 10, 12. And then something got thrown. And then you're like, we need to run. And it's such a bizarre situation because you're like, I'm running from a bunch of 10-year-olds. But you're also in an area you don't know. The area wasn't the best. And these guys were not, they were just bored.
They're having fun at your expense, aren't they?
Massively. They were happy. Yeah. So I've had things like that happen. I've had situations where, I got into one, which is a really long, like you got the gate and then a really long entrance up to these houses, like 1960s houses. And the door was open, but I didn't really think much of it. And as I've got right by the door, some big German shepherds come bounding out and had to do literally the jump over the fence. And I remember jumping over. This dog was on my tail and I literally jumped over it. And it wasn't massive. We're talking, I don't know, 4.5 foot, something like that. So I've got to jump to get over this. The landing wasn't pretty, but there's a German shepherd behind. And yeah, and the woman came out and said, oh, don't worry about him. He's soft. He wouldn't have done anything. I'm like, I'm not taking, you know, what a good saying that. I've got a German shepherd who's just running as fast as he can, teeth going for me, snarling. And she said, oh, do you want to stroke him? I'm like, not really. And so you have these situations. And it's a funny job because you learn a lot from it because you meet some amazing people. But one thing it also does, it takes away, I think with being in a sales and a business environment, if you're in a business meeting, everyone has got their persona put on in front of them. So they'll be dressed smart. Everyone's dressed normally similar. If you're at a casual meeting, everyone, it's normally similar, isn't it? Yeah. And door-to-door is not. You're seeing people in their real life. You're even going into their world. Mm. And it also takes away a lot of prejudgment. And it's a big skill that you learn from door-to-door. It's rhino skin from resilience and also to never prejudge. Because the amount of people you would think would be rude are the nicest. The people you're expecting to get deals from, you don't. So I think with the two big sides for that, I think if anyone's going to be good at sales, go and do a day doing door-to-door, let alone a couple of months doing it. Yes. It really teaches you a very large amount about that.
Yeah,
and it's a bizarre job now, I imagine, doing it. If you were doing it now with Corona, I presume they can't do it anymore. You just take it for granted, a lot of this stuff that can go on.
I don't know how much door-to-door selling really goes on nowadays.
My suspicion
is a lot less because I don't seem to see it. Very rarely do I get somebody knock on my door. But I would agree with you, even a few days doing door-to-door, I think you learn a lot very fast. I was introduced to it by my father. And at the time, I was a bit curious as to why he wanted a 14-year-old going around door to door. So I shadowed him for a few days. And then he just said, okay, off you go. And that was a moment, I can tell you, to actually be knocking on the doors. And I had similar sort of experiences to you. I remember knocking on one door and somebody coming to the door and just belly laughing and saying, come and have a look at this chap, mum, dad. And then all the family came out to look at me. And I'm looking at myself thinking, what are they laughing at? And I couldn't figure it out. And another time knocking on the door and somebody coming in and thinking he was sort of strangely dressed and he was sort of peering from behind the door. And then a parrot appeared on his shoulder that started looking at me as well. And he was dressed as a pirate. I mean, what do you do? Do you mention it or just carry on?
Yeah.
I think you learn to be flexible, put it that way.
Yeah, you definitely have to be able to think on your feet. You definitely have to be adaptable. You also get used to being in your own surroundings. You have to be able to laugh at yourself.
Yes.
There's a lot of skills that really come from that, which really do work as a foundation. It's not necessarily something which is going to be the only skill you'll ever need, but I think with a lot of those skills, they are very good. If you're ever going to have your own business, if you're ever going to be have to go out and sell something or present, even if you're going to set up, like we say about, you're going to set a tech company up. If you can have the skill and resilience to walk into a boardroom, that's a lot less scary than walking, running and jumping over a fence with a German shepherd on your tail.
Absolutely.
And it
yes.
gives you good perspective.
Yeah, knocking on those doors, you just never know what's behind it. And it can often be a surprise. I absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, and I think it really helped as well when moving from those type of jobs into the more corporate-esque type of jobs, or moving into sort of doing business-to-business sales. Because suddenly, you've got to bear in mind with door-to-door, it's not, you don't go, oh, it's a nice day, I'm going to go and do door-to-door. You're doing a door-to-door job. So we were doing it, and I did it for about 6 months. I started mid-summer. By the time I finished, it was winter. So you've got to think, in the evenings, the job I worked at, I think we used to knock doors till sort of 7:30 at night. So it was dark for an hour and a half, 2 hours, which is really weird. It can be raining. It can be freezing cold. Other times in the summer, it's glorious. Other times you'll be dressed for summer and it'll turn into rain. And it makes you feel it's just so different. And you're in different areas all the time. So you're seeing different people. So it's like no other role that's out there. Even when you see, you'll see the ones who do the sort of, the chuggers, are they called? The ones who do the charity stuff in the high street.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know what you mean.
And I always think with that stuff, I've never done stuff of that, but I always look at that because a lot of those, if you talk to them and you ask where they're from, they're not local. They've normally come to that town for a day or to 2 days. Yeah. And then they go off and do another one there. And that's also a bit of a baptism of fire with people, because again, little skills like how much time you get to grab someone's attention, because you could quite easily just stand there for a whole day waiting for a deal to fall into your lap, and a whole day to go past, and you wouldn't have a conversation. You sort of have to go out and get it, but also be mindful on not being a complete pain. So having the different ways and approaches to be able to do that, it's a skill in its own right, for sure.
So where did you go from there? So you got that experience of door-to-door. How did you progress into B2B sales?
Into business to business. It was getting towards the winter and I was got wet a lot, which is all well and good. No one minds getting wet. But if you're doing that on a daily basis and you start thinking, is it really as worth it as you think? And an opportunity come up and I went off and worked with some B2B companies doing introductions. So suddenly you've gone from being outside in the rain to come inside. There's a tea and coffee machine over there. Here's your own desk. Nice comfy chair with padding on it. This is lovely. And literally, you're getting on the phones. So then suddenly you're hitting the phones. And you're hitting the phones and you're making calls. So suddenly you've gone from talking to, whatever, maybe you're knocking on 50 doors a day. But I can't even remember how many we used to do. But it's probably a lot more than that. To work in this company. And this company had this was early days when they had you had to manually dial, and right. You would press a button and it would literally a mechanism would lift the handset up and then dial and then it would drop back down, and we'd be doing 300 dial outs a day doing wow. this, and so that was, again, it's a big change from what you've just done, from being adaptable every day to literally robotic, sat at a desk. And it was funny, the first time I did it, they always wanted everyone sat down, which other jobs later would always want you stood up.
Yeah.
And it's funny that with businesses are normally a direct reflection of the owner or the manager and what their beliefs are. So with that type of thing out there, they didn't really give a lot of sales. They had a very big, it's almost just throwing as much stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks.
Yes.
So you do a lot of contact, a lot of rejection, business to business, there's other hurdles in there when you're dealing with things like secretaries or gatekeepers, as a lot of people call them. So very different types of sales, very almost a lot more of a long drawn sales process, because if you've got someone buying a £30,000 phone system and it's got 20 offices around the country, and there's this person and that person, so there's lots of other things in there about finding the right buyer, which if you're doing door-to-door, it's quite easy to qualify that person because they're there.
Yes.
And they're over 18. It's a bit more, it's a less person. Suddenly you're dealing with a big company that's got 20 different offices. So suddenly you've got to have these skill sets, and you don't just want to have one of these skills or one objection. You want to have a wide range. So suddenly when you start realizing a lot of what can go on at the background of a sale as well. Because if you've spoke to Joan in accounts, then you might have to go through to Phil, who's the finance director. He has to agree to something. And then there's this, or you put all this work and you haven't got the right decision maker there. So actually you've just wasted X amount of contact because you didn't actually find out if you were dealing with the right person. So when you've had all this up over the years, you end up with a lot of experience that you can't buy. Because there's a lot of failures that come in with that, a lot of no's, a lot of rejection, a lot of German, well, not a lot of German shepherds, a lot of situations like German shepherds, luckily not a lot of German shepherds. So you end up with a lot of these things out there which can get you good results, and some things that you do right and you don't get the results. In the same way, if you play football, just because you played great doesn't mean you win.
No. So you've got, there's two paths there, or the continuation of your path, both which can be difficult. Door to door, telephone sales. Where did you go to after that? What was the next step? Was it something equally hard?
No. So then it was more B2C consumer selling. So then when you're moving into, if B2B is all well and good, but one thing which I always found with, if you're dealing with things like B2B, B2B is all well and good. And I think people have, when you're selling something, I think tangible products and intangible products work well. So stuff you can hold and stuff that's not. And I think with business to business is a very different spectrum again, because with business to business, it's very drawn out for selling because there's lots that goes on, whether it's from budgets. I think sometimes people like being in meetings. I think people with business to business are used to getting a huge amount of phone calls from people. Yeah. So they're very used to putting people off.
Yeah.
And I think this is one good thing with things when you look at things like social media now, because you can get to people a lot easier. You can get in front of a lot more people now than you could back in early 2000s. But it's a lot easier to get into these type of areas, but you can now get, you can speak to a business owner who's got a 300 following on Instagram. You can see what their business is, and they deal with whatever, pest control.
Yes.
And you can message that person. But if you try and contact them, to actually get them on the phone would be a lot harder. So I think it's great now where you can do that. So moving away from business to business sales and moving to direct phone sales, I worked for a company that did with utilities, which was almost like a call center, but wasn't. They didn't like calling it a call center, doing things like insurances. But you move through to a lot of different things where then you've gone from knocking on their door to then you're phoning them.
Yes.
And again, I think there's a big turnaround on this now where beforehand everyone had their home phones. Mm. So you would get phone calls at home. Mobiles become more prevalent with there. And then as you move through with businesses, you progress with sales into being in team leader roles where you're managing teams and start training teams. So then you're not necessarily on the phone or direct selling from that side of it. I did work before for face-to-face stuff with like event selling when you're meeting people. So you get hired almost as a gun for hire for a day for events. So you can end up selling huge different amounts of products.
Yes.
Because if you have sales skills, they're transferable. So if someone needs, if they've got a product launch or they want to be in a mall or whatever it might be, or you're going around to businesses for a couple of weeks doing different products, if you've got to be pretty adaptable for that, because you're not getting a wide range of time to learn a product necessarily, which I think is quite interesting.
I introduced you at the start, and I hope you didn't mind, as a former fallen angel. It was a bit of a play on words, obviously. But you've had those down times. Tell us a bit about that. Mm.
Yeah, well, as we started to touch on a bit earlier, when things start going really well, if you've got a sales team or you've got your own business and you're working huge hours, a lot of the time with these type of sales environments as well, everyone spends a lot of time together. So if you're spending a lot of time and then you're working hard and you're playing hard, But playing hard can quite easily become a lifestyle side, which I think now a lot of people see this with that. When you look outside anywhere, that's especially like in London, you look outside the pubs at 5 o'clock. It's just almost a daily thing where people would finish work, go to the pub, chew the fat. That can end up being into a partying stage. And you can be at the stage where that can keep on going. Now, does that mean that people can't produce business? No. I think if you're someone out there that functions quite highly, I'm quite a high functioner, so I can work on a hangover. I can go out on a bender and carry on. And it would just become more and more and more. And I didn't realize I had underlying mental health issues there. I don't know whether that's just changed a lot now. I think it more than likely has. But at the time, it would just be one of these things. You didn't necessarily know about depression or anxiety and all the other stuff. And it got masked very well if you were drunk. So if you're going out and you're drinking and you're partying, this works quite well because you think things are going great because you're living a good life. You've got the cool cars and you're doing great and everything's going well. You've got your teams, you've got a business, whatever it might be. But what we don't notice is the small changes that start to happen. A prime example, I think, with this is when you look at someone who's new in a business, not Mark, and you hire them and you get their best version. And over the space of that first month, you start to see a difference. And it's not a massive difference, but it's 1% a day. And over the space of a year, well, you think about you get a new starter after that first month. It's quite easy. You can see a 30% drop because it's for 1% a day, And I think with stuff like that, you can party very well and life's going great, but you get the hangovers last a bit longer. The excess carries on. You don't become as effective. And by the time you've realized things were fine, everybody realizes the problem, it's almost a bit too late, and then you're in a trap almost where what are you going to do? Take off 3 months and go to the Priory or some clinic to get clean. So people try and then I think when you go through a hard time, try and battle through it rather than address a problem. And if you're in sales, it's a very different thing because you can put a facade up in sales.
What was happening with you though specifically?
But, I mean, what the sort of chemical abuse and stuff like that, or?
Yeah, I mean, in sales, you know, you do have to probably, and I can hear you. You always come across with a lot of energy, and I can guarantee that that's how you are when you're selling. But I suppose there's a time when you need to turn off. You need a work-life balance.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I didn't really have that.
Alcohol is a depressant. It can help you come down a little bit, but it's long term. Obviously, it doesn't do you any good. Were you seeing in?
That was the problem I had with it. So we spoke earlier. I've got two kids, and at the time I wasn't with their mums. I was only seeing my kids every other weekend. So they moved back to where I'm now, and I was still working away. So if you're working away, you're not necessarily seeing the kids. You've got a lot of time on your hands. Socializing is very easy to do, and I just became less effective on a day-to-day basis. So then, if I'm going out and I'm ignorant to it, and you're trying to use things like escapism to get away from your problems. So socializing, drinking, thinking everything's great, life's brilliant, you've got money in the bank, everything's good. But over time, you become less effective, the partying happens more, you become more depressed, you get more anxiety, and then you try and counteract it more. And you're in a job where if you're running a team and you've got people that you're trying to inspire, then you put on the fake facade to try and make sure that they're getting through their day. So it becomes then this big cycle, but you're just going through the motions and you become immune to it. I think if everyone woke up every day and got punched in the face, after a month of that happening, you'd almost become quite used to it. Now, it doesn't change the fact that you're getting punched in the face. It doesn't change the fact it hurts, but you're used to that reoccurring thing happening. And I think with things like drink abuse, chemical abuse, that type of thing, it becomes so normal. But if you look at people that when they're depressed, a lot of the time when people are depressed, they don't even necessarily acknowledge that they're depressed. They just can't remember a point that they didn't feel like that. So that becomes the norm. That becomes the threshold.
Was
and
it
if that fresh
Was it just alcohol for you?
No. Mainly alcohol and cocaine. Right. But the big problem I had was I could function really well for quite a while.
Yes.
For days with no sleep.
And
then you become delusional.
Yeah. So did you have a moment where you realized that it couldn't continue, or was there a sort of a real down point where things had to change? What was that turnaround moment?
Yeah, I got to the stage. I had a couple of points with it, and it got to the stage where I was doing things purely out of habit, yes. Literally just excess, just escapism. You knew there was issues. You didn't want to do it. You didn't like being alone. You didn't want to be at home dealing with your problems. So yeah. You're like, oh, I'll deal with it next week. I'll deal with it next week. And that can go on for quite a long time. And if that keeps going, everything else around you, you're seeing the drop off with that. You're not being in close contact with good friends, because yes. The good friends will tell you what you don't want to hear. So then you socialize with people that you don't want to hear, but aren't going to tell you those things, who will actually do the opposite and encourage it.
Yes.
And then you end up at the stage that it feels like a minute, but a year's gone by, and you look gaunt, you're sleep deprived, you're depressed, you're taking cocaine every day to get through the day, you're drinking copious amounts every day. I could easily drink 4 bottles of wine, get high as hell, what would normally like sedate or get a highly dosed animal off of their rocker, and I was functioning normally to the extent people wouldn't even know. And that, I think, that was a big problem with it as well, because if you're in a job where people are like, you've been drinking at lunchtime, I've got a friend, you can put a pint in front of him and he looks half drunk just yes. by looking at a pint. I never had that. So if you can then get away with that, and you were using it as your coping mechanism, you're just getting the mental torture and the mental breakdown that you get. And then as that goes on more and more and more, you end up being at the stage where the money's going. So I'll get rid of the watch and we'll don't do this. And the house ends up getting in trouble. And then you're at a stage, you're just trying to just survive. Yeah. And at the worst point with it, I lost everything and was literally like living in the car for a couple of days. And not trying to let anyone know. And that was yes. the thing with it, trying to hide it, because it's easier to go, I'll go and get help. But there's a big difference for anyone who's ever gone through this, hope will probably can relate.
Yes.
It's very easy to say, I need help. There's a big difference to get your phone out now, look at the phone and go, who do I call? Then you get to that stage and then you decide on actually calling it and then actually getting to answer and then actually getting to the stage of doing it. So there's a huge amount of steps that happen. And it ends up being just quicksand. And once that had happened, I was at the stage where I just didn't want to even be on the planet. The self-worth happened. You've comatose yourself for so long, you don't have good thoughts or good insight, and didn't want to be on the planet. I mean, luckily, because I have the kids, I didn't stop for me. I didn't stay on the planet, sorry, for me. I did it because I couldn't face... The only thing I couldn't cope with was putting that pain on them.
Yes.
So, and at this point, I started to sort of realize I do a lot more for other people than I will for myself. I will go through pain for myself happily to help others, especially obviously your kids, which I think is normal as a parent.
Yes.
So, and literally at that point, man, it was like, right, it's got to stop. The boozing had to stop. The friends had to go. And literally I managed to get the money together to get a house sorted out.
Yes.
And literally started to rebuild, isolate myself off, didn't see friends, didn't do anything. Was still in a bad place, but you start to build back. And ironically, one of the only things that I was still able to do was sell, because you've got to put food on the table. Even if you're having a bad day, you still need to work.
Yes.
That was because I had to provide for the kids and all the other stuff, again, doing it for other people. And then step by step, bit by bit, you start to sort of come out of that, really.
So was it a strong work ethic or the discipline of work that enabled you to start to come out of that? Because that is a difficult place to be in. A few years ago, I did a project photographing and talking to homeless people.
Right.
And my perceptions changed. Of what is a homeless person. Some of these people that I was meeting and seeing, although they may be quite bedraggled, some of them were highly intelligent. And most of them had a story of something happening in their life and things getting out of control. And sometimes it would be something to maybe somebody else that may seem quite trivial, but to them, it wasn't. And it's
your
of
mountain's
knocked them off
your
track.
Mountain.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in that.
And they've got into that situation where they're literally living on the streets, and then that's very hard to move from because, you know, no fixed abode. It's even difficult to get medical assistance, and then to get a job and just keeping clean and feeding yourself can be very, very difficult.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of those stories, and I must admit, you know, I thought, I hate to admit it, but there was a part of me thinking that a lot of these people were just lazy.
Yeah.
And that isn't the truth.
No, massively not. I think a good analogy I've always looked at this with is how many of us are a bit overweight, right? Now, that's chocolate. Now, it we might do as a coping mechanism and stuff like that. But if we struggle to think, how did people get to that stage, and we're sat there and we're overweight and we're unhealthy, we all know what we should eat. We all know what we should do. We all know the exercise is good for us. But there's a big difference when we look at ourselves in both ways. Go, yeah, but life gets in the way and this happens. And it's true, it does. But if you suddenly get to the stage where you don't have a safety net, you don't have family to turn to, you don't have someone you can lean on, you can't get clean clothes, you can't... If someone took all your electronics off you now and just put you on the street, and you didn't have people necessarily to approach, and this might be because you've made mistakes... It might be because you've alienated people.
Yes.
And a lot of time it is people, they've made mistakes, so they don't have that friendship group. And you go, okay.
You cut off those ties and that ability to reach out.
Yeah, it's very easy to have that was their fault, they did it. Yes, it is. But okay, but if we take away the fact of what happened, how do they go from where they are now to getting to that stage, to getting better? And that was the blessing I've got was... managed to get the house, managed to start getting back up to work, could manage to do selling because it was one of the only skill sets I've got. So if I hadn't had that and I just had the car, and once the car would go, I mean, what would I have done then? So yes. I have massive gratitude. And because I managed to build a little bit of gratitude, no self-worth, but gratitude, yes. And I needed to pay the bills to help my kids because the kids were first, then it becomes a step and a step and a step. Now, going into sales jobs that... you've got loads of experience, you've had teams, you've made good money, you go into a sales job, you're obviously going to be a shining star. So then straight away, I really started to then it's like, well, train our guys, teach them what you're doing. And so because then in the morning I'm getting up and I'm teaching other people how to do things right, teaching them about mindset, teaching them about this, started back with my personal element, I started back listening to my podcast. Bit by bit, in the same way that you lose that 1% a day, I started building that 1% a day, 2% a day. And over time came out of that to now, obviously after realizing so long that I can train others, teach others, and I really enjoy it, the coaching sort of continued. And that's how the birth of the Sales Network platform actually came about, was because I needed to be in two places at once. And couldn't be because I'm not a magician. And someone said, why don't you just put that all online and then they could both access it.
Yeah.
So then it something good comes from it.
Yeah. How would you describe to somebody the difference in your mental state where you were to where you are now?
I've never been in a place that I can remember in my life where I feel so clear on for so much of the day. And there's a lot of things that come into this. Like I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. But I also had to change a lot of other things with it. I had to drop out a lot of friends, couldn't go to pubs, which is hard to do now anyway. So I had to, when you lose everything, it's a lot easier to change everything because you're already in massive pain anyway. Beforehand, I was more focused on the opinions of others, trying to impress other people. I suffered with anxiety then and now, but I have different glasses in the way I look at it. And that massively changes it around. A lot of the stuff I tried to hide before, I now embrace. So I tried to hide the anxiety. I would hide the depression. But now I acknowledge it all. I used to think happiness was a path, a place I was trying to get to. But now I know it's a state that you visit on occasions.
What form did that anxiety take?
Oh, crippling anxiety. There's a guy which I was really good friends with years ago who invited me to his wedding. And he's a really popular guy. And they were going to have like whatever, 180 people there. And he said like, and we hadn't known each other that long. He said, I'm not going to be inviting you to my wedding because I want you there. But you have to realize I'm going to annoy a lot of people about this. You've got to make sure you're there because I'm giving a seat up to people I've known for a long time who've been really good mates, but we're really close. My anxiety, literally that morning, nothing had happened, nothing bad, nothing went on at all.
Yeah.
And literally couldn't leave the house. Couldn't, right. And it's just so, like, it's so bizarre when you talk and try to vocalize the anxiety.
Yes.
And literally just couldn't do it. It's like some concrete shoes just wouldn't let me move.
Was it an anxiety over the expectation of being in that environment?
No, I didn't have to do anything. I get anxiety over the bizarrest things. And I now realize the way I look at anxiety now is like having a pet tiger. I think having anxiety, when it's under control, it's like a superpower. I get laser beam focus. I have more drive, more determination. My brain seems to work better. In the same way, if you had a pet tiger and he's been good, he's a pretty good guard animal, it'd be brilliant to have. But on the flip side, if that tiger decides it wants to try and bite you or run down the road, you're not going to be able to control it. And I think that's exactly the same. And that's why the analogy for me always works. Because when anxiety, if I'm having a day where my anxiety is high, trying to say, don't have anxiety is not going to help. It's never going to help. What I have to do is do something that's either going to distract me for a bit. A lot of the time going off, and a lot of the idea of going home and shutting the curtains is something people can associate with. But I do it a little bit differently. I take an hour and I go and I lie down. I don't try and go to sleep. And I go there and I sit there and think about stuff I like. Things I want to do in my life. Places I want to see. Imagine what the sunset would be like at this place, a beach here, my daughter getting married, my son getting married. And think about things. Now, these aren't things that are going to fix anxiety, but what it does for me, it changes my mindset from the focus. If my focus is don't think about a black cat, I've got to think about a black cat to then not think about it.
Yeah.
So I can't sit and think about how do I get rid of anxiety? How do I stop this anxiety? Because my focus is on the anxiety. Yes. I have to change my mindset to becoming back to that person. So yeah, it's like taming a tiger. And I think the stage I'm at now, for me, I found a way that really works for me. And now I probably get anxiety 5%. And I think not drinking makes a massive difference.
Yes.
All that stuff out there, which I used to always say to people, oh, when I used to do cocaine, I don't get any anxiety. Like, it really helps me. And everyone else freaks out, I don't. It was just true.
I know that we've got something in common in the fact that we both get up in the morning early and go training. Mm. How does that help you? Because there are multiple benefits from that, and we all know that. We know that exercising regularly will help your health. But is there also, is it helping your mental state? Is it helping to keep the anxiety under control?
Yeah, it helps with it. It helps with self-worth. Seeing change and stuff helps.
Yes.
I think at the moment I'm doing a lot of stuff more recently. So in the summer I've been doing a lot of bike rides. So I like to, my days are busy because I try to fit it in with my coaching, doing a lot of stuff, creating content, etc. I'm doing a lot of podcasts, which is great. So then I found that I wasn't actually doing my personal development. Now, with personal development, I always think if you don't have a circle around you that boosts you up, there is stuff out there to listen to that will help. You just need to go off and find it. So there was a number of different things I used to listen to. But then I was like, well, I want to get a bit fitter. I hate running. Trying to convince people, like, oh, just keep running. Eventually, you'll find your flow. I don't want to wake up every day and go for a run. If it takes me 2 miles to find my flow, I don't want to do 2 miles of something I don't enjoy every day.
Yeah.
But I can find something I do.
Yeah.
So then I would start bike riding, and then I would have my podcast on. So then that would help my mental state because I'd be listening to words that are going to come into my brain and help me think differently. Going to do lifting weights. Am I strong? No. But I am stronger now for what I do. I am stronger now and my ability is better. So if you've got low self-esteem and low self-worth, then that's only going to help. No one's going to the gym and going, do you know what? I regret that. Unless you've had an injury, no one goes, you know what? That was awful. I really wish I didn't. We might joke about it because we're out of breath. But when you go home at evening, you've had a shower and you're relaxing, you feel better about yourself.
Yes.
It's like doing a barbecue and leaving the old coals on there. You can't do that. You need to change it up. You need to change that. So that helps. And we spoke earlier about the Thai boxing stuff, which for me, because I know I function quite high frequency with stuff, I need something that's going to take my full attention.
Yeah.
So bike riding, there's a good rhythm of that. I never got the rhythm with running. I got the rhythm with bikes. With weights, you've got my focus because I'm lifting something which I'm struggling with, so it's got my attention. With Thai boxing, if I'm doing pad work, you're copying a routine of what someone's saying to you. Do this now, this and move, do this and this and practice this and turn that. So it gives your full attention and it's tiring. So that really helps for me because, again, it changes your state. I think we'll all remember a time where we were in a bad mood and someone tried to make us laugh. And we're like, don't try and make me laugh. Now, the ironic thing was we were so close to laughing, but sometimes we're so self-absorbed, well, I do, that we want to be depressed.
Yeah.
Almost.
Let me ask you what may be a difficult question, actually, is if I had a magic wand and I could take away the downtime that you had, those bad experiences, would you want me to grant that wish? Take that away?
Knowing the fact that I've managed to come through it, I mean, it was horrible. It wasn't a short week or a bad week. It was horrific. And I genuinely, for a long time, didn't think I was going to come through.
How long was it? How long was that down period?
18 months, 2 years.
Right.
Like wishing I wasn't there thoughts for a good 8-9 months every day.
Okay.
So to come out of that, yes, it has built core foundations. And if you come back in another 3 years, it will have been a huge amount of time. So then when people have babies, they seem to forget. I remember what my ex looked like when she had a baby and the pain she went through, talking about the pain, and it was never going to happen again. After a couple of years, magically people do. So I think the pain disappears after a while. Yes, I think the path I am on is incredible, and I couldn't be more excited, and I found my passion. So with all those boxes ticked, of course I would keep that because I've now found a place I've never found before. I've stopped the boozing and all the other stuff, and my anxiety is more, all that type of thing, is more under control than it ever would. So definitely I would keep it, but I just need a couple more years to get the pain to subside.
So do you feel because of that you are a stronger person?
Oh, ridiculously so.
Yeah.
Ridiculously so. The relationship I have with my kids, but the amount of gratitude I have for life. We hear all this stuff all the time, and there is a reason we hear it all the time is because it works and it makes a difference. I take time, not every day. I'm not going to say I live like a monk. I don't sit every day meditating, but most days I have points where I sit there even for 10 seconds and really think, do you know what? God, this isn't bad, you know, compared to where it was. To the dark times and all the dark stuff that happened, there was a point I didn't envisage being on the planet at this point, let alone be helping people and seeing people thrive with a coach and watching my kids grow up to be such amazing little people. Mm. And having such clear focus every day, like waking up at half. I don't think I've needed an alarm to wake up for about a year. Now, I wake up at 5:30 in the morning from excitement, not because of an alarm. I don't make myself get up. I literally wake up. Now sometimes it's because I've got stuff going on where I'm like, oh god, I really need to get this done today. Oh, I should have done it last night. That happens sometimes, but the majority of the time I'm waking up because I'm like, I can't wait for today. I do a lot of podcasts with the States or wherever, Australia, so time zones change. If you told me a couple of years ago I'd get up at 6 a.m. to jump on a podcast at 6:30 to 7:30 in the morning, I'd be like, you're crazy. How much am I getting paid? Nothing. Not a chance. But now I wake up and I'm like, wow, I get to talk to people in another country, which, yeah, to be frank, ends up generating business with coaching and stuff anyway. But it's great to have that opportunity and to have the freedom. Like, we could be talking now, and with the coaching I do, I can do that anywhere. Yes. And there's not a lot of people that can go out and have that life where I can coach people on Zoom, on the phone, all of that stuff. With the platform, people can do that without even needing my help. So there's a lot that people can do. So what I'm building now, not only is it delivering great results and helping people and is great therapy for me, but it gives me a lifestyle that I can pass on to my kids. So I can't even imagine being able to go away with my dad whenever I wanted. But actually having that's very, very nice.
Yeah. I didn't know where this call was going to go when we first started, David. And I think that in recent years, there's been attempts by many people to be much more open about problems and mental illness. I think particularly for men, you know, there is a bit of a macho culture. I know definitely within the UK, we're probably not necessarily the most open of culture always. And that's something that can in a way be bred into us. So it's been fascinating to be able to hear you open up and discuss very honestly. That came through very much. I was quite taken by, you know, your explanation of your journey. And I know that there will be a lot of people listening to this podcast that they can relate to that. And I think it can also be inspiration to a lot of people. They may not have been on as tough a journey as you, or maybe it's even worse.
Yeah.
But I think that there will be a lot of people that can take something from that. And it's really good to hear that you've come out the other side. And I think definitely you are going to be a stronger character for it. And throughout that, what has been the sort of the backbone for you is your sales skills. So having your sales coaching business is a great thing to hear about. Give a quick plug then to you, to Sales Network, so that people know how to get hold of you, because it would be great if somebody reaches out to you.
Yeah, great. So, I mean, if someone wants to find me, the easiest place is Instagram, because I put a lot of content daily on there. And you've just got to search the Sales Angel, and you search that, and I'll pop up. There's ebooks on there for free. There's video content. There's carousels. There's loads of stuff you can get, which can give you a bit more insight. Also, if people do want to speak, I used to charge £150 for free for a strategy call, but I'm doing for the next month, I'm going to give 50 away for free, just because it makes sense, because if people have a chat, they normally like doing what I do. But also it means people can get a good feeling for it. Now, with the way the coaching works, I do one-on-one coaching, but I also help with a platform. So on the platform itself, so you can access this from your phone, your desktop or your tablet. It's all interactive videos, and there's 380 different videos ranging from 2 minutes to 20 minutes that cover everything for sales, from prospecting, objections, closing. It's 21 different courses. So literally, if you're in sales or you have even a team of salespeople, you can have individual users for each one of your team. So each person can learn from wherever they are. So if, for example, you've got field salespeople, they can have that and do training every day without having to pay out the vast amount you would have for something like a training officer to be on site and then have to come in. So it works really well. So yeah, if someone's interested and want to know more, just go onto my DM, the Sales Angel, and just pop me a DM or drop in the comments. It's me you'll be chatting to. I really enjoy it. And yeah, it'd be great to chat. On that subject, actually, if I may, a plug which isn't anything to do with me, for anyone who has gone through stuff that I've been talking about. For men, there's an app called Tether, which is T-E-T-H-R, which is a community group for men where they can actually go and have a no holds barred conversation with other people, which is really good for a bit of therapy or letting go. It's really good support, which I don't think there's enough for of men out there. Sorry, women, but this one's a man's thing.
Well, that's a great cause. And I would stress to the people listening to this podcast that if you're listening to the conversation that I've had with David today and you know somebody that this might be inspiration for, please share it with them. Forward it on to them and give some feedback as well. Thank you very much for today, David. Been a really interesting
call. Absolute pleasure.
And
thank you.
I enjoyed talking to you. And I know that I introduced you as the former fallen angel, but it sounds like you're about to fly. So good luck to you on your journey. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time today.
Cheers. Well, that's it. That's the Boss It podcast for today. And as I said, please do share this podcast. Let people hear the story about David Angel. I think it is a story worth hearing. And you never know, it might just help somebody. So until then, next time, keep safe and keep focused. Cheers.